Hello, and welcome to On the Irregular with Java Berry, a podcast where I chat to women from all walks of life about their own unique creative journey, how they got here, how their story has shaped their creative work, what they've learned, what has helped them, and where they plan to go from here. It's an irregular journey for so many of us, and I am delighted to offer a platform to share these fascinating stories and wells of wisdom. This week, I'm talking to Annie Klink, an American artist selling Mexican pottery. I first came across Annie on Instagram years ago when searching for other vintage sellers. At the time, Annie lived in New York and specialised in selling vintage rugs. Her elegant, bohemian, warm style appealed to me on every level. Annie has since moved to Mexico, from where she sells pieces of pottery and continues to infuse every aspect of her life with her own creative magic. On the day we chatted, Annie was sat on her terrace at 6 a.m, sipping a cup of herbal tea by candlelight, waiting for the rain to come. Unfortunately, the arrival of the rain threw the Wi-Fi connection off a few times, so my apologies for the sound quality on several occasions. Welcome to episode 6 with Annie Klink. Thank you so much for giving up your time to talk to me, and so early in the morning as well.
Well, you're very welcome, and I love this idea, and I was definitely a person that was influenced by you sharing your story and your path. It just was one of those things that kind of clicked with me, and when you mentioned it, it just confirmed again what I felt for my life, is that life isn't linear, and people are going in and out of things, and all of it helps you along the way, even if it feels a little disjointed. So when you shared it, I believe it was last year.
Yeah,
it stood out to me.
Yeah, it was really interesting because it was just a kind of a spur of the moment thing I just thought to do. Is that, you know what, maybe to give a bit of context, I should tell people about my back, you know, about my background. And I think it's also, I thought it was, I should probably share it because it was partly an insecurity, because I felt embarrassed that I've not been to art school and not trained. And I thought, well, you know what, to overcome this insecurity, maybe I just need to put it out there and kind of come clean about it, you know. And the response was overwhelming, because of course I'm not the only person who's had, you know, a twisting path. And of course, like, once I started talking about it, people were getting in touch with their stories, and I naturally gravitate towards people who have had, you know, an irregular path, a twisting, higgledy-piggledy way of getting to where they are, and will continue to do so, no doubt. Which I think, you know, is one of the reasons why I really love you. I also, of course, because I've followed you on Instagram for years, I think you were one of the first accounts I found on Instagram with, like, an aesthetic that I was just like, yes, that is it. It was so beautiful, like, because your photography, your styling, and then also accompanied by your captions, which are always so thoughtful and thought-provoking. And, you know, you really used it in such a creative, beautiful way, as well as, you know, as part of your business. So I feel honoured to be talking to you now. Really, really do. Your journey's just been so fascinating to watch so far. That's only the bit that I know.
Well, that's really sweet. But I do want to say that feels just so touching. I think Instagram's a lot harder than people know. And so, of course, when you're putting yourself out there, it feels empty and quiet. And so to have a response like that, or even just somebody saying, oh my gosh, I've been following you for this many years, or this was, you know, how I connected with you. I think that's, it really helps, and it's really meaningful. But also I feel like people are a little bit, can be turned off by Instagram. And I think there was a little bit of this narrative going around that it's this tiring place. And I really push back against that, because I think it's connected women so wonderfully that, yeah, I just don't think that we realize fully how great it's been for a lot of artists, for a lot of people creative, for people going on different paths. And so, yeah, I love hearing that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think especially probably this past year, and I think possibly since having because since becoming a mother, and I've felt quite isolated, and so I've grown a community online really, and then that's
Yeah.
changed who I interact with more, and then this past year not seeing people in person, it's become my gang,
I know.
it's really saved me. So yeah, so it's really lovely to talk to you, and I just you I got a, you know you sent me a bit of background about you, but I'd really love it if you could tell us just to start from the beginning a bit, like where you're from, your family, and a bit about your journey really. It's take the floor,
Oh,
please.
definitely. So I am originally from Southern California, and I am the child of an immigrant. My mother immigrated from Mexico in her 20s, and I've only recently started to identify myself that way as a child of an immigrant, but I think it's a huge part of my story, and I think when I say it, it adds the thing that I've been that doesn't feel communicated to me. So when I do say it, because saying you're Mexican American in the US, I mean, is a dime a dozen. There's a lot of Mexicans in the US. but communicating that my family immigrated, I don't think people expect that from me. I'm very fair skinned. My family is not. And so that just brings up, I just don't look like what people are thinking of when they think of child of an immigrant. So it fits a lot of things for me and it works out. And to all the kids of immigrants, or if you were an immigrant yourself at a young age, you were probably taught, or it was probably enforced in you, that when you grow up, part of your responsibility to your family is providing some type of safety net. And so a lot of immigrants and a lot of kids of immigrants become doctors and lawyers and just those types of careers where it feels like there's a huge safety net and it feels like there will be a strong income to support more than just yourself. So I'm definitely influenced by that, I think. And then it helps that I was good in math and sciences. And so my whole life, I just thought, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a doctor. And yeah, it's just, and I think a lot of people start off in school feeling that they're going to be a doctor and then change. I went ahead and graduated with it. I didn't change during school. And I don't think, I think that's an important for me to say because it was still a huge security for me to be able to know that at any like that I could do this type of work if I needed to. And it just took me a lot longer to realize this wasn't my path. But it was a huge help to me in the long run. I left California and went and lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and worked at a health clinic there and learned a lot and had a great experience and was introduced to the idea of public health and community health and then from there I came back and started working in a physical therapy clinic for a few years. And just as I was about to go back, because in the US I'm not sure how it is everywhere else in the world, but in the US, you have to finish your PhD to be, or your doctorate, not your PhD, but your doctorate to finish to be a physical therapist. So 4 years isn't enough. So I had applied and was ready to go back. And literally a month before I was supposed to go back, my partner that I'm with now said, I think you feel obligated to do this and you don't really want to do it, even though you like
Wow,
it.
that's
And
a big statement to make.
it was great. And it was really helpful. And it was one of the few times that my partner really intervened. He's not really the type of person that like would push anything on me. So it was a really big statement. And right when he said it was just so true that it was undeniable. So I decided not to go. I quit my job at the physical therapy clinic that I was working at, and I went on a road trip for about a month in the US by myself. I think I had a cell phone at the time, but no GPS or anything like that. And yeah, just reconnected with old friends. Like I went and tried to stay with a different person in a different city and to let myself kind of get over a little bit, like changing this path. But yeah, that was a
Wow.
huge statement.
That's really interesting that you've said that because I've so far I've spoken to two other women this week and about their creative journey, and two things that have been parallels with it. Both of them thought they were going to grow up to be doctors, and for both of them, taking a journey, like a physical journey, was a really pivotal moment in their lives.
Oh my gosh.
So interesting that you just said like both those things, and it's almost like you need to remove yourself from the situation where you are to truly tap into, your, I guess, your inner home, your
Yeah.
inner truth, where you want to be and what you want to be. That's so interesting.
It's funny that you should say that because my partner and I were just talking and I asked them, why do you travel? For him, what's your purpose? What's your reason? And he kind of gave a few ideas. And then he asked me, and I said, it's to get unstuck when I feel like my life is just, I'm thinking the same things and then come back. And it's like I even see my house in a new way, the work, the people that I'm talking to. And yeah, so I definitely believe that there's something to that. And I'm so interested to hear if it's a part of a lot of people's experience.
And so when you came back from your journey, where did you had you come to any realizations about your future, how you wanted to progress?
I don't remember. I don't think it was quite that instantaneous. I'll be honest, it probably took me 10 years to get over the idea that I wasn't going to go into medicine or healthcare or something like that more. I think when I came back, God, I don't even remember what job I took up. I might have waited tables. I might have waited tables to fill the gap in between and just let myself kind of go back. And I had waited tables through university too. So I think that felt like something that I knew was a steady income, but a lot of flexibility. And I just gave myself, yeah, I think it was like 9 months to a year. And then my partner and I got decided to move to Spain after that. Yeah, I think he was also in a place where his career path wasn't quite matching up to what he wanted. And one of the few things that I had insisted upon when we first met was I told him, I know I'm going to change a lot. And I know I want to live a lot of places. And those were kind of my two, take it or leave it. This is what is going to happen for me. And he had never been a person who had traveled or had moved or lived a lot of places. But he liked the idea and he was comfortable with it. I think a lot of people feel like they like the idea and are very uncomfortable with it, but he liked the idea and he was comfortable with that. So we moved. So it was like a chance for him also to get a little unstuck. So we moved to Spain, and then when we came back from that experience, that kind of opened a door for me to go into ESL. So I worked in ESL school for a number of years, but that wasn't like the right fit at all. There was a lot of interesting things about it, but it definitely wasn't the right fit. And my partner also went back to his old job and didn't have quite the right fit. But it took a while. It
But
definitely took a while.
you'd made a shift, you'd unstuck something, and it's I think that's interesting that not everything is always just this really clear revelation and
Oh my God.
change that you make and then your life changes overnight and everything just happens. I think sometimes it's really difficult when you're in it, but to not lose sight that those little changes are part of the design that are going to lead you to something that could be, like you say, like 10 years down the line, or it's all part of it. I think it can feel disheartening, I guess, sometimes when like you make these changes and you expect them to be big and huge, but
Yes. I think that's exactly it. If you feel like you are a person that needs a lot of answers, this, you might be limiting yourself right away, but if you know that you're different from yesterday, that's it. You know, that's all it, because that those little changes, I mean, I'm just a completely in a completely different space and place, and my life looks like what I want it to look like. And that was something I wrote to you too when my partner and I got together. Something that I brought to the table is I said, what do we want our life to look like if we're going to do this life together? Rather than thinking about what we want to be when we grow up, and just what do we want it to look like and what do we want it to feel like? And I really, for me, I really started there, and I was hopeful.
can you give me an idea of like when you had this conversation, what did you say you'd like your life to look like?
I think the big thing that I can remember was that I wanted to live abroad. I wanted to live in a lot of different places, and that things like staying in one place wasn't going to be for me, at least not initially. And so I think at that point in my life, I was very close to being able to buy a house in. I was able to buy a house pretty young. I worked way too much through college, and I just remember thinking, I don't want that for me yet. I want something else. And so that was really the biggest thing, was like just being able to move around and kind of let life happen to me, and thinking of adventures and things that felt fun to me. That was something that we talked about, and yeah, that I wanted to have in my life, and he was game for that. So that was it was good to have a partner to talk with those things through. Not that that is like essential to life, but that did probably provide a lot of a sounding board, and that probably helps a little bit. So if you have a best friend, or if you have like your family or somebody that just knows you and that can say yes to you, I think that helps.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no, I think that sounds very, I can really relate to that, like with my relationship with John. I think a lot of our relationship has been us telling each other what we want our life to look like. Like that's all we talk about. We've
Yeah.
got things written up all, and stuck all over the walls, and kind of like manifests of like this is what Java wants from her life, and this is what John wants from and we actually did an exercise once where it was when he'd just given up, decided to give up his work, and I was like, right, I think we need to both sit at the table, put our phones aside, and I want you to write down a list of what it is that you want in your life and how you want your life to look and how you want to feel. And I'm going to do exactly the same, and then we're going to give each other, we're going to swap papers, and we're going to see, and we're
I
going to
love
compare.
this. Yeah.
And it was, we'd pretty much written the same list, and it was such a wonderful confirmation. It's like, okay, things aren't easy. We don't always agree, but we are on a very similar path together, and that is incredibly reassuring. And I feel like I've got my team,
Yeah.
So yeah, it felt like a really powerful exercise, and we've now stuck those pieces of paper up in the workroom as a kind of a reminder of like, right, this is what we're going on, and also to go back and readdress, like, okay, well, are we still, is that still what we want?
Yes,
That can move,
yes,
that can change, but
yes.
just to keep thinking about, yeah, what, stay in the present, of course, and enjoy, but keep mindful of like what we're working towards, I suppose.
Yeah, because every small thing that you do is going towards something. So you may as well be going towards something that you would like to get to. And yeah, and it's like a little bit of concerted effort. I love that you two were so on the same page, that was something I always thought my partnership would look like, and we are not like that. We definitely adjust each other, I would say, and that was, yeah, that was something that was totally different, and I think that also wasn't something I expected for my life, but definitely works for me. And so a few things are the same, and then other things it's like, oh, I had never thought about that. And when we're kind of like you said, when we're both free to say whatever it is that we want, like we can write it down on a piece of paper, we both bring very different things to the table, and we both kind of go, oh yeah, you know, like I like that one, or that works for me, or I just never, you know, even imagined that idea, and we kind of click together in that type of way in piecemeal. So yeah.
That's so great that you've managed to find that in the relationship, a way of that being really positive, because it means that I guess that you're not allowing yourself to kind of become complacent or comfortable, and that you're still inspiring each other. And like, I love the word that you adjust each other, or you readjust each other. Like, that's such a beautiful way of looking at it. It's like you really work well together. You have different things that you want, but it really works because you feed into each other. That's beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think so too. And it's like I said, I'm only saying it out loud because you're asking. And I think that when you gave your experience of your story and I realized how much it impacted me, I'm like, oh yeah, of course our stories help each other. Like, say your story more, you know, say it out. And so you might, you know, whoever's out there, you might be with somebody and you thought it would look different than what it looks like. And yeah, that can fit differently.
Because how long have you been together, do you mind me asking?
17 years, I think we've been together.
That's a lifetime. That is a that's
It
yeah.
feels like a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, we're similar. We've been together about 13, 14 years, I think, and you grow and you change a lot in that time, and it
Yeah.
looked and it's it sounds like he's been incredibly supportive, and like he was able to step in at that point and say, no, I think you're doing this out of obligation.
Yeah. It's bizarre because it's not as, like I said before, it's not his personality at all. And so it was just such an interesting moment. But that's happened a few times for us, I would say.
And so
And
did you meet in Atlanta?
no, we met in California.
Okay.
Yeah, we met twice. We met once and he tried to call me and get my phone number, or he got my phone number and he tried to call me and I didn't return his call. And I didn't return his call because he had called like 2 weeks after and I had already started dating somebody at this point. It just happened to be like a miss, you know, at two paths walking. And then I went and lived in Atlanta, and a year after that we met at a wedding. Our roommates were getting married. And we had never met each other before. So yeah.
Wow.
So that wasn't linear either. That was like we met, and the first time we met, it would never, we both say, if we would have dated then, that would never have worked out. We had to become different people.
Yeah, I love that. I love when you can look back in hindsight and like, if that hadn't like not worked out, then this wouldn't have worked out. Yeah, that's
But it's funny to me that I guess I had forgotten this, but I know when I read your thing that I was fully paying attention to your different path, but I forgot that you didn't go to art school, and that is a huge point of insecurity. That was a huge point of insecurity for me for a while too, that I didn't come from a creative background, and here I was trying to do this creative thing, and I was like, what am I doing with my
Because
life?
had you always felt like you needed, or had you always had a creative outlet, a way of expressing yourself?
Completely, completely. And I was in theater, even when I was in high school, I was in theater, and even in college, I did shows, and I was always encouraged to go in that direction by my mentors. And I just couldn't do that. It felt too bizarre and too wide open and too not secure. and I just couldn't figure out how to do it, and I didn't understand that path. So I.
That's really interesting, because I guess yeah, if you don't see, I guess if you don't see yourself, if you don't see it around you, if you don't see people that you know possibly having a career, you know, that is financially secure within the arts, then, and you know, one of your priorities is to be secure, then yeah, why, you know, why would you take that chance? And like the arts are also renowned for being so insecure. And it's funny, because I think that for quite a while I didn't want to become a painter or an illustrator, because my mum was a painter, and we always had such, like, we were financially so insecure. You know, it was feast or famine. Sometimes, you know, we had lots of money, and we, you know, we'd like go and buy loads of food from the market, and then other days it was literally like, right, okay, what can we make with potatoes? you know, so, and I'm kind of like, oh, I want something more stable. But then, you know, I went to drama school, which is the complete opposite. But it's interesting, yeah, the ideas, you know, how what forms the ideas that make you think, oh, maybe that's what I'll do with my life, and stop you listening to what you'd really just love to do and spend most of your time doing.
And I didn't grow up around, nope, like nobody that I grew up with went to university or to college either. So that already felt like a big feat to do that thing. I already felt like I was really like, oh, okay, well, I'm already doing something big, and nobody else that I'm growing up with is going this path at all. So, there was just so many things. I will say too, for the US, this is important to say, I probably wouldn't have felt as secure going this path if we didn't have healthcare. Since I was in healthcare, my partner, I'm on my partner's healthcare. We don't have universal healthcare in the US. So that was a huge thing, like a huge thing holding me back too, in that there's that lack of security that if something does happen to you in that kind of way, you don't have that, access to,
That's huge. Yeah, that's a huge deciding factor. I can see that. Wow. And so, 'cause what led you eventually to, 'cause I mean, you know, there's your Instagram is Annie Annie Vintage, and like, you, when I in fact came across you, is the vintage rugs that you were selling. But it's always felt like there's so much more than just the rugs. It's very much a style, and the way that you styled your home and your photography, and you have a very strong eye, and that just comes through. It doesn't feel forced or contrived. It feels very natural. That's clearly like something that you've honed, you know. And so it's obvious that you clearly had a very strong, and have a very strong creative side that you know, that you expressed on stage. But there's also a really strong aesthetic there, and like what you're doing now, selling the amazing clay heads with the faces. Oh, that's just, and it's the way that you present it as well. You know, you really, it's just, it's so, oh, I just want to dive in there and be amongst all these beautiful things that you've collected, and the way that you've set the scene. And yeah,
Thank
how,
you.
what, you know, it's
I
honestly, it's a
don't.
joy.
Yeah, I don't even know. And I think, I mean, I definitely feel the same. For you, I came across you, and you, before I even answer my parts, is the thing that struck me about your place is you guys are doing your life in the midst of it. So it doesn't feel untouched. It feels like, oh yeah, and then there's the kids, and then there's they're having dinner, and you just see it always happening. And that Yeah, that it just that inspires me for my life. I think, oh God, you can live around beautiful things, and you can make your life feel this certain way. And that's a huge part of my daily life is how things feel. My home is a huge anchor for me. So it being put together and pulled together is really important to me. And I recognize that it makes for a better life. And again, it's something it took a long time for me to be okay with that because it feels fluffy and soft, and I just realized that's my own bias that I had to get over, that I had to be able to move in this direction because it moved me, because it was important to me, and that was okay. That was like enough. And that's like something you just never get taught. Again, as an immigrant kid, you just never get taught that the thing that is important to you is important and you should just do that thing. You just never get taught that at all. You're always supposed to think of the group, and so those things, it just felt, it was, yeah, it took a while for me to get connected to that. But I do appreciate you saying that it doesn't feel forced. That part's important to me. And how I pull things together, I want it to look like, I want it to feel like something. I want it to look like something. And even if it's just a little soft, like a little moment, yeah, that's enough for me, you know, to pull things together. And I just think, oh, yes, that, I love that, you know, and I'll just shoot, make, take a picture and I'll spend time editing it and I'll rearrange things. And yeah, there's something really wonderful about that. And I feel, as a person who was a scientist, I feel like all the things that we do to fill our life and the things that we want to do that make our life good is all stuff that's creative. I mean, you go to the museum, you go to see a show, you go to watch, you know, a movie, you go to listen to music, and it's, you know, the person that you see on the street playing an instrument or dancing, it's all of that. And it's not by coincidence that that's the thing that wakes us up. And so we definitely don't believe that it's as important as it is. And yeah, so that part, or maybe other people do, but I didn't let myself believe it was as important as I now believe that it is.
Well, I mean, I don't know, especially at the UK at the moment, there's you have a Tory government and they're making endless cuts to creativity and the arts, and it's always under attack, and always. And then like in the schools, they're defunding any arts programs, and it's all being put into sciences and you know, technology. And it's, you know, of course, that's just sending out a really huge message
Yeah.
of that's the fluff. That's the fluff, and it's not the important stuff. So it's, yeah, you of course you're going to grow up feeling like, well, that shouldn't be prioritized. That shouldn't be prioritized. And it's madness, because what do we fall in love with? You know, we
Yeah.
fall in love with art and music, and we fall in love with people who make us feel those things, and
Yes.
we fall in love with ourselves within the art. And you know, I don't know, it's, you know, it's what it's kind of it's a huge part of what life is made of. And
Yes.
it's really sad, because it's, you know, it's what history books also, you know, are full of.
Yes. Yes. You're
The
not
culture.
going back and remembering the 1920s for the experiments that they did. You're like, oh, look at their gowns. Look at those hair pieces. Look at the way, you know what I mean? It's just absurd that, yeah. And I feel so, yeah, I feel so attached to this idea that, yeah, that we miss it, that we think it's, that we think it's soft. And I'm really indebted to my teachers that I had at a young age, even though, you know, in elementary school, we, like I said, I didn't grow up around anybody who was going to go to college. And I realize now, we weren't in a really, really poor area, but we were definitely in an area that was, yeah, that maybe was looked over and forgotten about, and it's still that way. It's not a place that's going to ever be gentrified. It's just like still really, you know, below, I think, aspirational things that people are thinking of. But the teachers that I had were just amazing people. I remember the first time I went to go see a show, like a true Broadway show in LA, was because this my sixth grade teacher said, we're gonna go, there's, you know, the Phantom of the Opera was really huge at this point, and they had come to LA, and he was like, this is a really important thing and I want you guys to experience it. And what that means, though, is that you're going to have to do extra work. And so he taught us that if you want to enjoy arts, it actually takes a lot of effort to really get the most out of it. And so we went in every single day for lunch period and for our recesses, and we would listen to the music, and he would say, "This is what they're saying." And you're never going to hear that if you don't know the words beforehand. And so you'll miss the whole show if you don't spend the time now learning the words. And we spent probably a month preparing to go to this show. And yes, and it's like, it's, I think one, like we grew up around people who, I grew up around people who were bilingual. So like probably 10 or 15% of the school that I was at was a second language learner. And he was the first person that said, if you want to enjoy arts, it's not just supposed to touch you, it hits you in all different levels. And if you don't spend the time with it, you don't know that. And I think with a lot of the arts that we ingest, it's easy for us to do the work. Like for music, that it's 3 to 5 minutes long. And so you learn the words and you sing along and you don't realize you're doing the work to figure out why this song is touching you in this way. But that's what you're doing. And with all the other arts, they're so much longer and they're so much more, it's a little bit more difficult. But I always feel like he introduced that to me, and I never like connected the fact that the only way the art can be good is if you spend the time with it, and if you really dedicate a little bit of energy to it, it makes it that much better. And
You're giving me
yeah.
goosebumps. This is like,
Oh.
it's so,
But
that's such,
right?
yeah, that's such a fantastic way of looking at it, because it also feels like a really fantastic analogy for connection with humans, because that's, in a way, a lot of art is self-expression, and it's, so you're taking the time
Oh,
to
I hadn't
really
even
listen
thought of that.
Yeah,
My
and
God.
for that, your communication and your understanding is, of talking to people is gonna, or understanding people is gonna be elevated.
Oh my
I
God.
just see so many kind of, oh, that's, yeah, I love that you've told me that. Thank you so much. Okay, that's gonna stay with me all day. Wow. Wow, what a special teacher.
Yeah, and I just think like everything that you do is because of the energy that somebody put into you. And so it makes, for me, it makes life a little bit less scary or intimidating. I feel like, oh, I've met all these great people in my life. I'm much more prepared than I realize. And it also stops me from feeling like jealousy or anything like that towards other people, because I think, oh, well, this person had a painter for a mother. So, they saw colors put together and they saw textures and they saw things, it's like just hang out with that person more and you'll get that too, and it's like it's not just like, oh, this person has this and that person has that, and I guess we're all just supposed to accept that. I feel like, oh, we're all kind of going forward and we're all utilizing each other if we are honest. If we're not honest, we think that we've done it ourselves. But if we're honest, we know that somebody helped us along the way. And yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I feel like I sometimes feel really grateful for all of my mum's friends when I was growing up, because I used to love visiting their houses, because, or their flats, wherever they lived, because they all had such interesting homes, and I'd just spend loads of time looking at the objects that they had sat around, and I feel like I've just absorbed that, like a lifetime of going over to people's houses and basically having a nosy and having a look around. And that's like, and that's completely informed how I've styled our home. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's, if you really, that's like you say, if you spend time with other people and listen, and it can be so rich. You can just, yeah, that's what we are made up. We are made up of all the people around us, if we're willing to listen and be open. So okay, so tell me then, what happened? How did you move to New York? What happened there?
This was largely based on my partner, but it was definitely my influence. My partner was also in a similar place of wanting something different for their life. And so he started taking classes and things that he was interested in. And I also started taking classes and just, I took a bunch of different classes as well, but we were both kind of taking a few junior classes here and there over the years, trying to see if something stuck. And he came across economics and he got into a school that's really great in California. And I said to him, no offense, this is a really great school, but you didn't apply like to a big array of schools to see, where it could take you. He just applied to one that was close to us. And I said, with my idea of wanting to live everywhere, why don't we see if this takes us somewhere? And he just loved that idea. And so he put his acceptance on hold and he got into New York, and that was the place that felt right for us. And it also felt good for me because I was going to leave my school, my job working at an ESL school. And I think it would have been harder for me to become this creative person if I hadn't left everything and everybody I knew. Because change just takes a lot of energy, and you're made up of the people that you're around. So if you're just around, people who know you in one way, changing is just so much harder. So that, yeah, that opened that path up a little bit for both of us. But that was the start.
And did you know you did you have a history with New York or yourself?
No, I had been there once. I actually went there for my bachelorette party. And it was one of the first places that I've ever been to where I realized, oh, I didn't know a place should feel like this or could feel like this. It was one of the first times I ever connected with a place and just was like, oh, this feels right. These are my people. This is, yeah. So I had that love affair, but I never, and I'd always kind of in the movies you see for the US, it's like you go and live in New York and you live in a loft and this kind of thing. So there was that. I don't know if you guys have, if you've
Oh,
ever experienced
definitely.
them.
Everybody
Oh,
wants to
okay.
go and live in
I
the
don't know if that's neat. Okay, everybody's doing this. Okay.
loft in New
Yeah. And so that was over 10 years ago or 10 years ago now. And so it feels, yeah, it just opened up so many other things.
Yeah, I was gonna say, does it feel like that's where a lot of things came together for
For
you?
sure. Yeah, for sure it was the first step for me to being creative. I started selling vintage. I had taken a class, an AutoCAD class, which is for people who don't know, it's something that you take in for like architecture and stuff like that. And so I was feeling my way into these different artistic things, and I just didn't know what was going to work for me. So I took this AutoCAD class. And again, another great, great professor. I'm such a person who's like, my teachers have affected me. this teacher said, well, I told her, I look around this class and it does, I love the work, but this, I see who's here and it doesn't feel like me. And so I said, can you help me with that? And she said, well, part of this class is also to open the door for starting a business. When you're taking things at a junior college level class, there's like an academic aspect, and then there's also a real life aspect. So at this particular school, they wanted said, maybe you'll go forward with your education with this class, or maybe you'll start some type of work with it. And so she said, why don't you try and make something with the stuff that you've learned and then see what that turns into. So I made these records, these ornaments. They were bird ornaments, and they were made out of old records. And I don't know how I got this idea. It just came, and I loved it, and I started selling them. And this was when Etsy was brand new. So she turned to me and said, well, you've made these things. Why don't you see if you can sell them now? And I was like, okay. And so I sold, 20 or so. I was just surprised that they went anywhere. And even though I love them, I thought, who could possibly find me? It just was such a bizarre time.
Must have been such a thrill, such a thrill to sell them, like this thing that you've
It
created.
was, yeah, it was, and it was, yeah, and it felt really great. And I just came back to her and again used her as a mentor and said, I love this, but there's no way I can sell bird ornaments for the rest of my life. This also doesn't feel, I'm having a great time, but this also feels short-lived. And she said, well, why don't you think about vintage? And I had always loved vintage, and it was clearly a part of my aesthetic, a part of my life. And she just kind of threw that out there, and it fit. And so I started, I had already bought vintage for myself, but I started selling stuff for my home, and kind of it took off from there. And that was kind of the beginning. I started really small with little things, and then eventually made it up to selling rugs. And yeah, and took like a full-on journey, but
Because I love, I think there was something really that really appealed to me about you're specializing in rugs somehow. Like you make, because that each rug was so completely unique and told its own story, and the way that you styled them, and it was just so, it was so beautiful, and they kind of took on a whole character of their own rather than just being a rug. The way that you presented them, it was like you were telling a tale with these beautiful rugs.
Yeah, with the rugs, oh my God, it was another like I said, it was another balls out moment where I just had to be brave and try to do this thing. But I came across them at an estate sale and I thought these are gorgeous. And part of my feeling behind vintage is just bringing things that people don't have in their everyday life and bringing that out there, because so much of what shops are inspired by is vintage stuff. I mean, you go to any modern shop now and it's like they're pulling ideas from the past. It just felt like so truthful to come and go to those actual pieces and bring those things forward. Mostly what I was selling was Persian Iranian rugs. And so one, I felt a little bit of worry, like I didn't know anything about them. So I usually buy things and then I do a bunch of research, probably like you do. You spend hours and hours and hours researching and looking things up, and then I just try and talk to people. And so for my first rugs I bought, I met with a rug cleaner, and he also sold rugs and he cleaned them, and he talked to me and started me through and just shared his information. And I find most people really do that for you if you're open. So he started sharing information with me, because one of the things I really didn't want to do was to blindly sell something that I didn't know anything about, especially something coming from another country. And so these all were Persian rugs that had been in the US for years and years. And yeah, and I started finding them, and I just loved it. And then spent ages getting to know different people. And now I have a person in Michigan, I have a person in Chicago, I have a person in LA, two people in LA. I have a person on the East Coast now, all who help me source and help me find those rugs. And I just met them along the way, and we just connected. Yeah, we just connected over time. And you mentioned politics, and it's hard to stay away from this, but for the US, we had shortly after I started selling rugs, we had the Iranian ban. And so there was no new stuff coming in from Iran. We had the sanctions and all of this kind of silly stuff that feels like it doesn't affect us, but actually affects our regular life. And so for me, what that meant was, technically we're not allowed to sell Persian rugs, because even though they had been in the US for ages, there was no way to verify whether or not they had just come to us. I was like, to hell with this. I'm just going to keep selling these things and I'm going to figure out how to do it. And I don't care if I get some fine from somebody. I just kept it up. And yeah, and it just felt, it felt like they were beautiful, and it also felt important.
That's so much more. There's so much more story there to your rug journey than just like, you know, finding some vintage rugs and selling them on. That's so fascinating, and it's so interesting to hear that there's like, oh God, this is a really terrible metaphor for rugs, but like the rich tapestry of your rug selling, you know, with the political backdrop.
I can't
as well.
Believe I haven't said that myself. yeah.
How long have you been in Oaxaca now? Is it like, oh, is it, how do you pronounce it? Because it's spelled O-A-X-A.
You've got it perfectly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the spelling is not conducive to easy pronunciation for most of Western world. It is Oaxaca.
Yeah.
And it's been gosh, 9 or 10 months or so. We came in October. And yeah, it's been wonderful. And again, it was another chance to get unstuck, I think. Mm-hmm. And so,
because that's quite a
you know,
huge...
I hadn't.
Sorry, it's quite a huge move to make in the middle of a pandemic as well. Or I guess it feels like
it was, yeah. And I felt really, I felt and still feel really proud of the move. I think, again, this kind of goes back to my background in the sciences and stuff. I felt like we made the best move for us at the time, and I don't feel like we made it just out of the blue. So one of the things is we were obviously in New York in the middle of the pandemic. It was hit really hard, like a lot of places were, but for the US, New York was one of the first places that was hit terribly, terribly hard. It affected, I mean, everything. It affected my shop. It affected everything that we were doing. But because it was affected so harshly, it was also one of the first places that sort of cleared up a little bit. And so when the rest of the US started getting hit hard, New York was actually doing well, relatively speaking. And so the beginning of the summer, we hit zero deaths. And I just remember feeling like, oh my God, okay. We figured out how to handle this. We are in a good position and, you know, we're going to be able to manage now that we've been hit so hard. And unfortunately, that wasn't quite true. But at that moment, probably 2 or 3 days later, I said to my partner, wait a minute, why don't we move to Mexico? And I'm usually the one with the crazy ideas, and he's usually the one looking at me really big-eyed, like, what are you talking about? Do you know that this is very, like, this doesn't feel very safe, you know? I mean, it was in genuine fear, like, he was making a point, and I said, no, it doesn't, and nothing at that moment felt, like, secure, but I knew it was going to go on for a long time. So when the pandemic first hit New York, my partner and I went for a walk like 2 weeks, you know, into the lockdown and this kind of thing. We went for a walk together just to clear our minds. And he asked me, how long do you think this is going to go? Is this going to be like an all summer thing? And I said, Jacob, I think this is going to be 12 months to 18 months. And he was drinking coffee. And I remember he spit it out like it was a TV show, like it was a total spit take, and he got upset. He was like, what, how could you say that? And I said, well, it takes 12 to 18 months to make a vaccine, and I don't see how we get out of this without a vaccine, is my thought. And because we weren't really understanding how effective masks were, and even though people were using them, we just, as a society, as a whole country, as a world, we just didn't understand that, like, that was it. Like, just don't be next to people. and don't be inside. Like we were kind of getting, we kind of understand bits and pieces of it. And at that point, we were kind of understanding bits and we were at the beginning of understanding bits and pieces of it. But I just thought it's going to be a long time. And I remember I had friends who were like teachers and stuff, and they said, "Oh God, I just can't wait till summer, and then we'll go back in fall." And I just remember thinking, no, it's not gonna, and it just, and it proved to be true. And so we made a decision based on me thinking this is gonna go on for a long time. And New York was actually really low numbers, so I felt comfortable leaving, and I didn't feel like I was at risk of bringing COVID to Mexico. That was a huge responsibility for me. That was a huge thought for me. So we were tested, and then we got on the plane, and we had all of our little masks on and stuff. And then we got to Oaxaca, and we quarantined for 2 weeks, and then we started to live our lives. And but yeah, it was just based on the idea that this is going to go on for a while, and I can connect with my family's heritage, and I can do a few things that are going to be able to help my family out if we're down here now. And things that I didn't think that I was going to be able to do right away. I thought, oh, it's going to be, I'm going to retire, and then I'll be able to do these things for my family. So this just opened that door, and I'm really, really glad that we stepped through it.
Wow, yeah, it's, I feel like you kind of, it's almost like you found a portal just in the midst of the chaos, and you like that was only going to be open for a bit, and you went through it, and it was, it was like I think you, like you say, that you feel really proud about this big move that you made, and I think it says a lot about your kind of your trust and your faith in each other, and in that, that change doesn't have to be scary. And of course, there's all the scary implications of the pandemic, and like you were saying about, making sure that you weren't carrying the virus with you to Mexico, but there isn't. It's incredibly brave, and but so full of hope, so full of hope, and it's really, oh, it was, yeah, because I remember following us, like, what? Annie's in Oaxaca now? Like, because the only reason I really know about Oaxaca is my mum spent time there a couple of years ago, and she completely fell in love with it. And when she came back, she was like, right, we're all moving to Mexico. And at the time, Griffin was like maybe 1 year old. And I was like, I'm not sure how that could work, but she'd figured it all out, how we're gonna do it, how we're gonna earn a living. So it's always kind of this alternative universe of if we'd moved to Mexico. And then I have
Oh my gosh.
a couple of friends here in Hebden Bridge who are bizarrely from Oaxaca here in West Yorkshire, and they've both
Oh
married,
no way.
yeah, they came over and they married Yorkshire men, and they have children here, and I meet up with them sometimes, and they're like, oh my God, how do you deal with this weather? I'm so miserable. And they talk about how they miss the vegetables and the colors of the vegetables, and
Yes,
yeah.
yes,
Yeah, so
yes,
it's really lovely
yeah.
then seeing a little window into your life there. It's really beautiful, and like what a life,
Yeah.
your beautiful little flat that you've moved into, and your little terrace, and now, yeah, with the faces that you're selling, and the whole story that you're telling about, yeah, the people that are making them, and it's such incredible craftsmanship. They're beautiful.
I think when I first came down here, I thought, okay, I'm gonna try and silence my business brain and my worker brain. It opens up other avenues. And we chose Oaxaca specifically. My family isn't from more of a northern state. But we chose Oaxaca because it is so artistic. And I'm always trying to make sure that I have that influence in my life because, like you said, it gets silenced in so many ways. And because I didn't go to art school, I wanted more of that feeling. But I saw these pieces and I just felt so touched by them. And I was like, oh, these are really beautiful. Whatever it is that they're about, there's something really interesting here. And So I started to seek out the artists, and yeah, and it took a while to figure out whether or not I felt comfortable selling them, and whether or not I could feasibly figure out how to do it. And so it started like that. Oh, and one thing that I really love that I feel like is coming from the pandemic as well is I feel like people are reaching out a little bit more in terms of what they want. So it feels nice to have people electing things as opposed to saying, oh, what's there? You know, it just feels like there's less waste involved, even though I don't even know. It just feels more intentional and it feels more purposeful in that way. And so it feels like people are really kind of reaching out to me in that way and saying, I want this, I want this. And that feels like a good path. I feel like people are less being sold to and more saying, this is what I want for myself. This is what, you know, I want for my house, or this is what I want in this kind of way.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that actually. That's true. I can totally see that.
Yeah.
It feels like so much has shifted in this past year that I don't know that I will fully understand it until quite some time to come.
Right?
Yeah.
Same. I
Yeah.
think we're all doing well considering. But I think, yeah, we'll be talking about this once everything, I think, will come to this. How did you change your job? Oh, well, there was a pandemic. You know,
Yeah.
how did this come about? Oh, well, we all had to hibernate for a
Yeah.
few months. And yeah, I
Exactly.
definitely believe it'll affect us in a long way.
Yeah, completely. It's been so wonderful talking to you, and I feel like there's so much more that we could talk about as well. So I'm really hoping at some point to maybe revisit the people that I've spoken to this time round, just like for a catch up and to maybe explore other areas, because I feel like we could have endless conversations, really, all the different tangents that have gone unexplored.
Yeah. Thank you so much for reaching out and asking, and also, of course, for sharing your life. I think I get so much from it.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise, I really, like you were saying earlier about Instagram can have, of course we can be tired of it and it can have a bad rap. I feel like I've also though, I find a lot of richness in it, and your account is definitely one of my absolute favorites. So thank you so much.
Thanks so
So much
much.
for your time. Aww.
You can find Annie on Instagram at AnnieAnnieVintage, where she shares her daily life in Mexico, the incredible pieces of Mexican pottery she sells, and her effortlessly stylish home. Thank you so much for listening to On the Irregular. Please make sure you review and subscribe, as it helps other listeners find us.